listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Welcome to the podcast, the flagship podcast of Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency. Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency is the only registered 501c3 nonprofit wholly dedicated to exposing the hard truths about pharmacy benefit managers and how their greed-centered profit-at-any-cost business practices are driving up drug prices and healthcare premiums while reducing consumer choice and endangering patient access. The podcast is brought to you by DataScan Pharmacy Software. DataScan Pharmacy Software is a family-owned and operated independent software solutions provider for independent pharmacies nationwide. Learn more at DataScanPharmacy.com.
Hi, everyone. I am Monique Whitney. I'm the Executive Director of Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency. Welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm really happy to be reunited with two of my favorite patient advocates. These are two women that I think everybody who's listening to this podcast today already know and already are familiar with. I am so happy to welcome you both. Loretta Bosing, how are you, my dear?
Great. Love the listening session today in Washington, D.C. with Mark Cuban and seeing that Sherilyn O'Conn was there. Just such an hopeful moment in pharmacy. And today was just historical, beautiful day.
It really was. It really, really was. And of course, Beth Waldron, who you are so my hero with everything that you're always saying and how outspoken you are on social media. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. I'm hopeful, but I think maybe I'm just a tad bit more cynical that anything's going to actually get done. So,
cynicism is something I feel like I've been dipping in and out of that pool now for at least since the beginning of 2023. So I get it. I definitely get it. But you saw the hearing today.
Oh, I did. And I thought it was, first of all, it was wonderful that the White House acknowledged this issue, that they held a listening session. I mean, that in and of itself is a big step. I think where I sometimes as an advocate begin to get fatigued is these are the same issues we've been talking about for years now. And, you know, I was really hopeful that this is going to be the year. This is when we're going to finally get something done. And I feel like, you know, as much as there's optimism that, yes, people are listening, that's not translated into action and actual policy changes. And I think that's where, you know, depending upon what day of the week you ask me, I'm either hopeful or I'm like, oh, it's never going to change. You know, so maybe that's just the push and pull of it.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned the fatigue and it's real. It's definitely real. You know, every one of us have been doing this now for years. And, you know, it looked like we just were on the brink of something. And I guess not this week, right? So for everyone who's listening, as we record this this morning, we had the pleasure of seeing Mark Cuban. And we had Lena Khan, and then we had several other people at a White House session talking about pharmacy benefit managers and the terrible effect that their practices have had on patients, on independent pharmacies, on drug prices. You know, Beth, as you said, it's the same issues, right? We've been talking about these, and now here we are so many years later, and the White House is now involved, and it's something that we thought would never happen, and that's my dog weighing in on that for everyone who can hear that. And yet here we are, 50 plus bills floating around Congress, and it doesn't look like there's going to be any meaningful action taken for this. And these bills were a big deal for patients.
Very disappointing. There's no option but to have hope. I've been advocating now for 5 years, and it was really the pharmacist that taught me about the issues on Twitter. You know, they've been speaking about this all this time. But, you know, seeing today for the first time, you have someone that has a major platform that understands the issues, you know, and really has the public audience that we've needed on this issue, something we've been missing. You know, it's possible that we could see monumental change, but, you know, Congress needs to get it together. This isn't, as Mark said today, this isn't complicated. They need to fix it.
And I think you just brought up a good point, and that is the public platform of talking about these issues. And that's something that Mark Cuban does have. He does draw a lot of attention. And so I was thrilled to see him there today to sort of bring, I guess, celebrity, if you will, to this issue. And hopefully that will get some media coverage, because really, I think that's what it's going to take. It's going to take some public pressure. It's going to take this getting more media coverage than it has. It's going to take, you know, a wider proportion of the American public to understand what a PBM is, how it's impacting their day-to-day life and their ability to access medications at the pharmacy of their choice and for an affordable price. That message hasn't conveyed. We've been talking about this a long time, but most people still don't know what a PBM is, and how it impacts them. And that's something that if we could just get that public pressure piece going, that's the part that would create action. You know, I really do. I hate to say it takes a good public shaming, but it really does take a good public shaming sometimes to get action.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I think that's about the only thing we haven't tried. Representing the pharmacy side of this, we have been the nicest people. Now, Putt's outspoken, and we, you know, as we've all joked about, we've been called various things. And even, I think, in our outspokenness, I think we've been not hard enough, not shaming enough for what happened. I mean, I think, you know, from our point of view, one of the things that just made my heart swell with happiness was when Mark Cuban said that thing about, like, do you think that, you know, what do you think we'd say on Shark Tank about under reimbursing pharmacies? And I was like, exactly, you know, because business, and it is a science, you know, dictates that you have a product or service and you sell it for a little bit more than it takes to produce it so that you can have money so that you can go back and do it again a second time. And if you can continue to do that, eventually you'll be able to make, you know, enough to even live on, right? And that's been like a dirty message for some reason for pharmacies. Like, you can't say that pharmacies need to be made whole in order to continue serving patients, right? And so, you know, for us, that's been the challenge. I'm particularly interested though on your side. I think I always kind of envy the voices of the patients, because I feel like you get the ear of the important people more than we do. And I'm wondering, over time, have you seen that improving? How's that been for you as the patients talking to decision makers and policymakers?
You know, I think there's two levels. And one is, you know, I deal with a lot of patients day to day who, you know, and physicians in my local area who are trying to get access to medications for their patients. You know, it's really until they run into an issue that they then become more educated about these things. In terms of the politicians, or at least our local politicians, I think that piece is still missing in terms of them understanding the role that PBMs play in drug costs. Everyone likes to say big pharma, big pharma, big pharma. And, you know, yeah, pharma plays a role in prescription drug prices. So no one's doubting that. But they're not alone. They're not the sole actor in this. And I think what neither patients or physicians that I work with, and especially not the local policymakers, there's not an appreciation that pharmacy as a business does not fit the business model of any other industry that I'm aware of. You know, you mentioned you've got a product, you have a markup, you know, your profit margin, and then that's what you sell it for. And I bet you every patient going up to the pharmacy counter thinks that that's exactly how their, you know, prescription drugs work. And they have no clue that that's not how it works. And it is such a unique industry. Just trying to explain it, I don't think it fits a paradigm of what we're used to. You know, it doesn't fit that cost plus model. You know, it doesn't. So there's not a benchmark, I think, for most people to really understand the pharmacy industry, because it is such a unique animal. So that's a thing that, no, I'm not sure that we get it. And I think it's a real hard thing to explain because it is so unique.
And I agree with Beth. You know, I can tell you, you know, from on my side, the patients I'm seeing, and I see it a lot on Facebook and on Twitter, is usually where I find patients suffering. It's nothing to find, you know, 70 to 100 patients a day. When you just search, just do it yourself. Search OptumRx, search Express Scripts, CVS Caremark. there are so many patients going without their medications. Either they can't afford it, it's not coming in the mail on time, they can't get it from their pharmacist or pharmacy that they want to use, so they're just giving up. A lot of patients are increasingly going outside of their insurance, and they are, you know, just going to an independent pharmacy and paying cash. And it's sad to see. They shouldn't have to do that when they're already paying so much, you know, for their healthcare insurance. And who's that helping out? You know, that's helping the health insurances get, or health insurance companies get more wealthy. And, you know, enough of that. We need to stop it. And that's where, you know, I think those patients sometimes we can, if we can educate them, and it's hard sometimes to have the time to educate every single one, but someone with the platform like Mark Cuban can be the start of something like that for sure. And I see that happening. People are starting to understand it. As far as, you know, seeing what the legislators, what they're doing, it's just, I'll be honest, it's disappointing. In my state here in Missouri, there was a letter recently where the 39 attorneys general had signed, you know, for Congress to take action. How could Congress not do something after seeing that? Hello, Congress. Is anybody home? You got 39 legislators or attorneys general on your doorstep saying do something. And you're like, oh, no, we're not going to do anything. You know, it's just so, so frustrating. And my attorney general here in Missouri did not sign the letter. And I don't get that, because there is a lot of patients suffering. And he, you know, seems to be someone that really cares about the people of Missouri and protecting us. But, oh, not signing that letter. Just, I like I said, I'm still hanging on to hope. Thanks for, you know, the brave, passionate people like you all. And, you know, I always, someone asked me yesterday, they said, you know, what associations are really helping at the national level? And, you know, my first thought when it comes to any group at all that will include patient advocates is Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency. There is no other group that I've found that really embraces patients and includes patients the way that PUT does. And I'm just so thankful. But it is because of, you know, associations like this. It's because of the patients and the small handful of legislators that do care, you know, that I do have hope. But we have so much work to do, a lot of work to do.
Thank you. That's so kind of you to say. You both, you're each working on critical issues that have such a deep effect on patients. You know, Loretta, you've been the crusader for mail order pharmacy not being mandatory for patient choice, for temperature metrics associated with, you know, mailing, and being here where I am, Maricopa County, where it's 1,000 and 1,000 degrees, like in summer every single day. And we do so much mail order pharmacy from here. You know, I was just so gratified that you were able to come out here and talk to our Board of Pharmacy. Now, for everyone listening, Arizona's Board of Pharmacy isn't quite as smart as Loretta. So they are still trying to get themselves organized around this incredibly important message about how temperatures affect medication. However, there's also some things that are in the works, as I understand it, here in Arizona that may greatly change the way our Board of Pharmacy operates, which means you may be coming back to, you know, have that conversation again. And I definitely cannot wait for that to happen. Beth, you, last time you and I were talking, you were talking about non-medical switching. I was curious what's been happening with that. Have you won many victories? We're doing something about that here in Arizona, thanks to work you've done that brought it to the attention of patient groups out here.
In my state, North Carolina, we are not doing anything in terms of non-medical switching, or really PBMs in general, which is kind of a shame. I was very pleased that our attorney general did sign on to that letter that Loretta mentioned. So I know there are people within the state who are aware of the issues, but there's not the momentum, I think to some extent they're waiting for the federal government to take the lead. And there is bipartisan support for these bills that are pending. You know, that is why it is a little bit surprising that more is not getting done, is because this is an issue that there is pretty good and wide agreement on. It's been 2 years now, I think, since the FTC had their listening session there where they had public comment. And I think there were somewhere around close to 30,000 public comments. And, you know, we're 2 years down the road and we're still sort of waiting for action there. So the piece that I think we need to get going, it's wonderful that you have pharmacy nonprofits who are talking about it, but I think we need more disease state nonprofits to get engaged on it because, you know, this is an access issue for patients, not just rare disease patients, but heart patients, cancer patients, rheumatology patients. These associations that represent these disease states, many of them do have lobbying presence in Washington or participate in lobbying in some way. I would love to see them get more engaged about medication access. It's, you know, everyone likes to talk again about drug cost, but is there this huge piece, even if you can afford the medication, if you can't access it through either restrictive formularies, through non-medical switching, through your pharmacy taking a loss on it to where they really can't afford to fill your script. If you're struggling to access that medication, that should be on the forefront of every, you know, disease state nonprofit that's out there. You know, that's as much of an issue as disease awareness and treatment. You know, we're always talking about it. I come from the cardiology and hematology kind of background because of my condition. And we're always talking about, you know, treatments and we want the latest and greatest treatments that are out there. And science has gifted those to us through research and development, but it doesn't mean a thing if we can't then access those prescriptions that our doctor prescribes. The newest thing I'm seeing, it was the issue I had was non-medical switching of anticoagulants, which is a big, that's the number one and number three Medicare expenditures are anticoagulants, blood thinners. So there's a huge market for it. It impacts a lot of people. And what I see is, you know, one battle was just to get the drugs on formulary and to get them covered, because if they're not covered on formulary, they're not affordable. So we got them on formulary, and it seems like the PBMs just sort of find other creative ways to put up barriers to care. So, for example, the drug's on formulary, but now maybe it requires a prior authorization. Or the reimbursement is so low that pharmacies can't afford to fill it. And so only their pharmacy, their mail order pharmacy, can fill the prescription. So those are kind of what I call these creative barriers to care. So instead of taking a drug completely off formulary, they're still making it inaccessible. The result is the same. Patients can't get it. But they're doing it in, I guess, a more palatable way that they're not the one taking it away. It's the patient sort of deciding, oh, I can't afford this or I can't access it. And so I think there's these more little creative barriers to the non-medical switching now, but the result's the same.
It's amazing how they come up with some new way to shift it so that it's like, like you said, like the patient is suddenly now the chooser of not getting it, or the pharmacy is, you know, they're having to ship the prescription to another pharmacy who can fill it because they can't fill it. And I've been interested too in what's been happening lately. I've been talking to some of my pharmacists who have shared where they, you know, will tell a patient, you know, I'm sorry, I can't fill this for you. And then the patient says, well, I can't go across town. I'll just have my doctor, you know, change the prescription to a generic. So while I am not a pharma apologist on this, I sort of feel like even they get caught in this whole thing because they have put up the research and development, the money, they've done the work, and they get a short period of time for this brand. And while that, I just want to say for everybody, I do not justify in any way high prices for drugs. The way that the system is set up, they put this brand out there, it's a brand, and then the PBM has it set up in such a way that only a select few pharmacies can even fill it on a patient's insurance. So it's like everybody is losing, and here's the PBM gaming the system in some way that makes it look like, oh no, it's not our fault, it's just the way that things are. We don't know how it got this way. It doesn't have anything to do with us. Don't look at us. We're not the ones that made it this way, even though, you know, they are, right? So in today's hearing, again, the Mark Cuban White House hearing, that's what I'm calling it, but for everyone who's listening, we'll make sure we include a link to the hearing in the show notes. I think it was Dr. Price who said there should be no formularies. Like, it should just be the doctor should be able to prescribe the medication, the patient should be able to access the medication. I was curious what you both thought about that comment, if you agree, if you disagree with that.
I totally agree. You know, I feel like our physicians know what's best for us. They know the medications that we need. There's a reason why they say we need this specific medication. I know for even with my son's medications, he's a liver transplant survivor. There's even certain generic brands that his transplant team does not want him to take. You know, so it's very important that we let physicians lead the way in prescribing. And, you know, currently what's happening within the PBM industry is that we've seen where they'll select medications sometimes on the formulary, the list of covered drugs that are higher. So we know that it's, they're not doing it because, you know, it's more affordable. They're just doing it based upon what they can make the most money with. So, you know, I do believe that we need to just stop allowing for these PBMs to make the choices that our doctors, that our trained professionals need to make for us. Our lives depend on it.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I'll second what you just said 100%. And you know, a formulary in and of itself is not a bad thing. When they first came about, it was supposed to help encourage lower cost medications. But that's not how the formularies are currently functioning. The medications that get on formulary are the ones that the PBM is getting the highest kickback on to prefer on that formulary. So it's not necessarily the cheapest drug for the patient or the employer plan. It's not necessarily the best medication guideline-wise. It's just simply the drug that they're getting the highest profit margin on. And what we're seeing is a lot of times brand will be preferred on formulary and not the cheaper generic. So the whole talking points of, oh, you know, we have the formulary to drive you to lower cost alternatives, just simply isn't true. The evidence isn't there. It seems so clear that they're steering patients to drugs that they get the higher margin on. And that's partly why we see formulary changes happening all throughout the year, is as their contracts change and as they get, you know, better deals on some drugs over another, you know, they'll switch it up in the middle of the year. It doesn't have to be at the beginning of the plan year. You know, they'll drop a drug or change a drug in a particular class mid-year. And those patients who were on the drug, they aren't grandfathered in to remain stable on the drug they were on. They have to change drugs. So, you know, that's a huge problem. And so the formulary, I think we have to completely blow away the current model and readdress it.
Yeah, I have to say, I when I heard him say that, it really reminded me of way back in the day when I was first doing this work, and it started to occur to me, like, why can't we have access to a medication? If it's out there, if it's available, if you can buy it, why should it be, you know, not on this list that my insurance company is giving me? So if I need it, I have to now, you know, go spend a fortune out of pocket for it. It just didn't make any sense to me. I was curious, Beth, as I was listening to you explain that, you explain it so well. What happens when you find yourself having these conversations with other advocates or with decision makers? Do you feel like they understand you when you're explaining this? Because we all speak the same language, right? So this is like the three of us, we could be speaking French right now and enjoying our conversation and no one else speaks it. So they can't understand what we're saying. But when you are having these conversations, how does that go? Or do they pick up what you're talking about? Or do you find yourself having to, you know, re-explain it?
There's a lot of explanation, partly because we're used to the model of, oh, you can't have the brand and you need to take the cheaper generic. And so if I say non-medical switching, that's automatically what people think about is, oh, you know, the generic is equal to the brand. And of course, why wouldn't you want to do it? It's perfectly fine. And there's a certain sentiment that the PBM knows best, that they've researched it, that they've got committees, they've got doctors and pharmacists, and they, you know, they're just switching out one drug for another drug that should be perfectly equal. And so therefore, you as a patient, what are you complaining about? Because you're getting covered access, it's just a different medication. And, you know, the powers that be say these are equal and they wouldn't do it if it wasn't safe to do. You know, so there's a certain mindset, I think, of trusting the powers that be. And so a lack of awareness of getting in the weeds that knows a lot of drugs are not comparable to each other, even if they're in the same class of medications. And that's why it's so important for the doctor who knows the patient to be making those decisions and not a PBM actuary somewhere. So I think that's the struggle in trying to explain it, is exactly why this is dangerous for doctors' decisions to be overridden by an insurer. And then I think the other thing I hear a lot in terms of pushback is, well, gee, we can't cover everything. We can't have everything covered. We can't, you know, the system would go bankrupt if we paid for every medication. But Medicare has decided that there are certain classes of medications that are so significant that you should not be non-medically switching them, that every drug within that particular class should be covered on formulary, that these particular drugs should not require prior authorization beyond the initial prescription. And those are called protected drug classes. And so for things like anti-seizure medications, for antidepressants, Medicare has rules in place that say you have to cover every brand within that class, has to be on formulary, and they have certain rules. What I think needs to happen is we need to broaden those classes that we consider protected classes. You could make a case for a whole lot of medications, you know, anti-rejection medications, anticoagulants, you know, that it would be dangerous for patients to be suddenly switched off of their stable treatment for no particular reason other than the PBMs getting a kickback on it. So, you know, I think there's also a middle ground. If we can't cover everything, then at least we need to broaden the definition of what is considered a protected class. Again, for anticoagulants, which I deal a lot with, I mean, I hear from patients who are leaving the emergency room, and it's paramount that they start on their blood thinner right away. I mean, immediately. There does not need to be a day's delay. And they're going to the pharmacy and discovering, oh, I need a prior authorization. You know, and that adds a day, especially if you happen to be diagnosed on a Saturday or a Sunday on the weekend and you can't get up with your doctor's office to do the paperwork. So little things like that, that I think would make things so much easier on patients and pharmacists, you know, having certain drugs that are protected from these sort of creative barriers to care that PBMs are putting up. You know, that could be sort of an interim step to all out reform, is you could have some incremental changes that would be quite easy and administratively easy to do. It doesn't take an act of Congress. These are things that Medicare, CMS could do administratively if they had the willpower to do it.
And thank God it doesn't take an act of Congress, because right now, as we're learning, Congress can't do very much at the moment. Now, I think that everything you just said is such a good point, you know, and these things, these prior auths, I know that for an employer who's trying to keep their drug spend down, it sounds like such a good idea. Here's what we'll do. We'll put a hold on certain medications, and we'll just make sure that some doctor's not taking advantage and trying to pass off an expensive medication. I'm sure there's some conversation like that that goes on, but really all it is it's a delay to pay tactic. And when that happens, I think if more employers, if more plan sponsors mm-hmm. understood that these drugs, when a doctor is prescribing it, the doctor's not getting a kickback. There's no financial interest in the doctor for the doctor to prescribe what they prescribe. They are working on behalf of the patient. But if this patient doesn't get the medication, if there is a delay and it is something like a blood thinner, the repercussions of that are so much more expensive than if the patient had just gotten the drug in the first place. I mean, we've quoted this all the time that it's something like $360 billion a year in unnecessary costs associated with patients not having access to their medication. Mm-hmm. And it's the taxpayers that pick that up, you know, ultimately. So,
and thank goodness, though, that there are pharmacists who are willing to go the extra mile to work with patients to help them get access when they run into these barriers. I know I was chatting with a pharmacist last week that late in the day on a Friday, he had a patient who left the ER, newly diagnosed blood clot, was needing their starter pack for anticoagulants, and the insurance came back that they could not fill it because a prior authorization needed to be done. And so poor patient is in tears. What do I do? Do I go back to the ER? Because a lot of ER docs will not start the prior authorization. They'll leave that to the family doctor or the specialist to handle that. And so this particular pharmacist, because it was late in the day, rather than sending the patient back to the emergency room He said, I just could not have it on my conscience that here they are, if they died or, you know, they had a stroke because they didn't get this medicine. He pulled out of his own pocket and he covered the medication for that particular patient until they could get the prior auth stuff sorted out in the next day. So, you know, bless him for doing that. I don't know many people who could do that or would do that. So, yeah, I mean, this is something I'm seeing daily, and it seems like there's been a dramatic uptick since the first of the year, I guess, with benefits changes of more prior authorizations being required, of more pharmacists just unable to financially fill the script. Because this particular pharmacist, he was going to take a loss on this script, even when it goes through, because of the nature of the drug class. But the fact that he was willing to go that extra mile for the patient, you know, just speaks volumes.
You know, anecdotally, as you were sharing that, so Change Healthcare had the outage these last several days. Change, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know about Change Healthcare or what it is, it's what's called the switch, right? So it's a data healthcare company, and its basic process, if you will, is to sort and send information to the right places. So doctor sends a prescription, it goes to the pharmacy, pharmacy submits claim for the prescription, it goes to the PBM. There's everything associated with it. Change Healthcare stretches across the entirety of the healthcare system. So it touches hospitals, it touches doctors, it touches everything, right? And so why I'm saying this is because this outage, the cyber attack they've been under, affected every single pharmacy. We did this survey of independent pharmacies, 161 responses in 48 hours, and 150 of those 161 pharmacies said that although they couldn't get verification, they couldn't, they weren't maybe able to get the information they needed, and they weren't supposed to fill these prescriptions because of the outage, they went ahead and did it anyway. So 150 pharmacies paid out of their own pocket, dispensed medication on a risk that they may or may not, you know, get reimbursed for it. And every single one of them said the same thing, which is we can't leave our patients hanging without their medications. Like these were medications that were life-saving, critical. These patients had to have it. And, you know, to me, that just says a couple of things. One is, of course, I'm proud of our pharmacies for doing that. I think that's the mark of a true, you know, professional medical provider. I think any physician in the same situation would do exactly the same thing. But the other thing I think it points to is it points to when you've got one organization, in this case, United Healthcare owns Optum, who owns or oversees Change Healthcare. It's such a risk. It is such a risk. So even something like, I suppose you could look at United Health and say, well, nobody anticipates a ransomware cyber attack. Although I will say everybody should, because it's not like this just happens. Like Change was the first one to have this happen. We've been hearing about this now for a couple of years, but in the event of that, you shouldn't be leaving the most critical populations hanging and wondering what's going to happen. In addition to, you know, talking to the pharmacists about how did they handle it and how many patients had life-saving medications that were at risk, we also said, well, what was the effect on the patient? And I have more answers that say the patient was frustrated, the patient was in tears, the patient was angry, the patient yelled at us, the patient thought it was our fault. You know, like it rolls back on them because there's such a, it's so spread out. Everybody is touched by this system. And yet, as you both have pointed out, people really don't understand it. It's unnecessarily complex. And so it's difficult to understand that your medical provider, it's not their fault that this has happened, that they may not be able to dispense a prescription and yet you need the prescription. It's hard not to be upset about that. Little bit off the mark or off tangent there, but when you mentioned that, I just was thinking, because I was going through those responses right before we all got together for this podcast and was reviewing just some of these stories that they were sharing about trying to take care of patients.
I myself, you know, when we were forced to mail at our pharmacy, and because the issues we had before, my son was, you know, two and forced to mail at our pharmacy, and they shipped his meds on a hot day without protection, and he went into rejection. I remember once again when we were forced to mail at our pharmacy, and I was that mom that broke down at the counter, you know, just pleading, please, please just help me, you know, and so in that moment, I think, I mean, some may feel sad, some may feel anger, some are just exhausted dealing with their condition. And then here you are now, there's another barrier to get your medications that you probably just went through several barriers to get approved in the first place. And it is just so important that patients do understand to, you know, not take that on their pharmacist, you know, to understand that they are human too. And, you know, they're not the cause behind these issues. And hopefully by educating more people on that part too, you know, we've seen that with the chain pharmacist when they came out about the issues with understaffing, because that was publicized and people start being more kind to their pharmacists. So that's such an important discussion to have. And, you know, as far as them being so large and to be able to oversee, you know, that many people, you know, that is an obvious problem. They said, you know, millions of patients' data was given to hackers. I mean, that's massive. And all of America should be alarmed at that. No one should have that much power in America. So I hope that this opens up the door. And this is another exciting point. You know, although Congress didn't take action, Department of Justice afterwards, didn't they say, you know, they're going to, you know, go after them. So there's hope. There's things going on that we have to acknowledge, you know, even though Congress is dragging their feet. But I do feel like, you know, with Mark Cuban, with, you know, these issues in the spotlight, this could be a major driving force for politicians to do something this year, with it being an upcoming election for presidential election.
I love that you both bring such beautiful qualities to a really ugly and frustrating problem that this country faces. Laura, you really are just the embodiment of hope. And Beth, you have such amazing humor. And I think hope and humor are two things that we need as we walk into this, whatever it looks like, this fight every single day. I know for myself, I used to think I was like the calmest, most self-possessed, you know, able to handle any situation. And I learned really quickly that when I'm sitting across the table in a stakeholder meeting from insurance lobbyists and PBM lobbyists and PCMA lobbyists, that I am not calm. I have to, you know, sit on my hands to keep from reaching across the table to want to strangle somebody. We are coming to the last few minutes of the podcast. And as you were both sharing what you're sharing, I was thinking, I wish Congress could hear what you've been sharing. You know, like Loretta, you were just talking about being that mom. And, you know, when you're sick, when a person is sick, I'm certainly this way myself, and you just want to feel better. You just want your medication, you know, or if your medicine keeps you alive, as it does for many people with chronic conditions, you just want to know that it's there, that you have access to it, you know? And so I was thinking that I wish Congress could hear you both sharing your stories as we, you know, come to the end of our podcast. I'd love to know what you wish, if there was something you wish that Congress would know, what is that? What would you uniquely like them to know about this situation, or about what you deal with, or about the people that you work with, what they deal with?
I would say Congress, America needs access to their local pharmacies. We need them as options in our coverage, and we need them to get paid above their costs of medications. You know, I started with this petition that has over 200,000 supporters to stop the forcing to mail order pharmacy. And I realized, what good is that going to do if all of our local pharmacies close because they're getting, you know, reimbursed below their cost? If, you know, all the only pharmacies we're allowed to use is, you know, 30 minutes away and they're understaffed. We have major issues. And I love that Mark today said, you know, the issues are simple, you know, simple, you know, we need this issue fixed. They have to make sure that our pharmacies are being paid. And you had mentioned earlier that we have just become, you know, this nation that accepts that it's okay for someone to get paid, or I'm sorry, to not get paid for the work that they do. No, that's, you know, this is a critical service. They have to get paid. And we're seeing the consequences of pharmacists not getting paid above their costs. I don't want anyone to not get paid for the work they do. We need to, it's just important. I mean, if we could get in front of Congress, I do feel like the patient's voice is so often left out. You know, we need more voices. And I like, you know, Beth's suggestion of getting the chronic disease advocates, you know, to Congress. we need more voices there for patients.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I think that's the one thing I would want Congress to do, listen to the patients. You know, the health committees have had the PBM executives sitting before them. They've had the pharmaceutical executives sitting before them. There's lots of people who say, oh, we represent the patient. You know, PBMs will tell you, we look out for the patient interest. So there's so many people that speak for us, but we need to be heard in our own words, in our own voice, because this is an issue that impacts everybody. And I don't know that Congress really realizes the depth at which it is affecting their constituents, because so many people are afraid to speak out because our insurance is tied to our employment and we don't want to rock the boat. And I can tell you from personal experience, it's very, very vulnerable feeling when you depend on a medication for a life-threatening condition. And then to criticize your insurer or to criticize your PBM or be perceived as criticizing, you know, they're the ones that control the access to our medication. So we're at a bit of a disadvantage. And there is a risk to speaking up. There is a risk to advocating. And so I think Congress needs to take the initiative and listen to patients, listen to physicians, listen to those of us who are willing to speak and who can speak for those who are unable to speak.
Well said, ladies. It is such a pleasure to speak with both of you. Loretta Bosing, Beth Waldron, you are two of our favorite guests. We love having you on our podcast. We're going to have you come back. We will have lots of opportunities to keep talking. And for everyone who is listening today, thank you for listening to the podcast. We will see you next month.
This episode of the podcast has been brought to you by DataScan Pharmacy Software. As a family-owned and operated independent pharmacy software solutions provider, DataScan Pharmacy Software is a proud independent small business supporting independent pharmacies. To learn more about DataScan Pharmacy Software, visit their website at dataScanPharmacy.com. For more information on Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency and how you can help end PBM abuse of our healthcare system, visit our website at truthrx.org.